The reading this morning is taken from the Gospel of Mark chapter 2, and in the Church Bible it is on page 1004, 1004 in the Church Bible. Gospel of Mark chapter 2, beginning with verse 23, Mark 2:23. One Sabbath Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions." Then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath." Chapter 3, verse 1. Another time he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with a shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around them in anger and, deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake, and a large crowd from Galilee followed. When they heard all that he was doing, many people came to him from Judea, Jerusalem, Idumea, and the regions across the Jordan and around Tyre and Sidon. Because of the crowd, he told his disciples to have a small boat ready for him, to keep the people from crowding him. For he had healed many, so that those with diseases were pushing forward to touch him. Whenever the evil spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." But he gave them strict orders not to tell who he was. This is the word of the Lord.
So please keep your Bibles open on page 1004. I'm actually not going to talk at all about verse 7 to 12. So that's a disclaimer. My family has now been in Germany for 5.5 years. Our first morning here was particularly memorable, but not in a good way. The problem was that we arrived here on the wrong day. We flew into Leipzig on a Saturday. We spent most of that day finding our apartment, moving our luggage to it, getting our kids cleaned up, and unfolding after our 24-hour flight from Sydney. Early the next morning, I went looking for a supermarket to buy some breakfast to feed our hungry kids. I quickly found one, but it was closed. So I kept looking. Half an hour later, I'd found two more and three bread shops, but they were all closed. It was only at that point that I realised that there's no Sunday trading in this country. So the first time we ever came to LEC, we were all very, very hungry. Since that time, we've learned there are many more Sunday rules. You cannot make loud noise on a Sunday. You have to keep the kids quiet. You cannot use a lawnmower on a Sunday. And so on. And so all of the other Australians who I worked with, we learned to fear Sunday. Now, these rules prohibiting Sunday trading, and we had them in Australia too, until quite recently, they ultimately derive from the biblical concept of the Sabbath. And I think that most people's view of the Sabbath is based on their experience with these types of restrictions. Now, is that what Sabbath in the Bible means? Is it like the German Sunday, but even stricter? A day of restrictions. A day where you go hungry. A day that ensures some minimal fairness in working hours, but otherwise annoying, a bit boring and uncool. Now, I get the feeling that even Christians have inherited the Pharisees' view of the Sabbath. The Pharisees had the idea that the Sabbath is a set of rules forbidding you from doing work. And I think we take that as our starting point. But we also remember that Jesus attacked the Pharisees' idea in views like passages like the one we're studying today. The result of that is that we have a clear notion about what the Sabbath isn't. But I don't think we have a very strong idea at all about what the Sabbath is. As a result, the Sabbath is not something we get excited about. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen anyone get excited about the Sabbath. I've seen plenty of bumper stickers and banners that say, "Jesus is Lord." But I have never seen one that says, "Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath." But in Mark chapter 2, that's how Jesus describes himself. Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. And I hope that by the time I finish talking today, that we will see the Sabbath as something worth getting excited about. In this passage in Mark 2 and 3, there's two stories involving Jesus and the Sabbath. Each one of these stories ends with an attention-grabbing statement. At the end of the first story, Jesus announces that he is the Lord of the Sabbath, whatever that means. And at the end of the second story, the Pharisees and the Herodians plot how they might kill Jesus. Oh, of course, we all know that Jesus was killed. That's where the gospel is heading. But if you were reading Mark for the first time ever, you wouldn't have known until now. Mark doesn't tell us about Herod's attempt to kill baby Jesus. Rather, he begins the story of Jesus when everything is rosy. Jesus is a new preaching and healing sensation, and everyone loves him. But in these first chapters, things quickly go bad. Opposition to Jesus increases quite quickly. In chapter 2, it goes from a murmur of discontent in verse 6, "Only God can forgive sins. What is Jesus doing?" to direct confrontation in the end of the first story in verse 24. "Your disciples are breaking the Sabbath rules. Why?" And at the end of the second story, the opposition is completely unmasked. The people in power, both religious and political, intend to murder Jesus. For the Herodians, the supporters of Herod, Jesus is a threat to political stability. They've already imprisoned John the Baptist, but Jesus is even more dangerous than John. Whereas for the Pharisees, Jesus is a threat to religious stability. From now on, as we read through the rest of Mark's gospel, we know that Jesus is a hunted man. Wherever he goes, there will be someone who wants him dead. And what was the trigger? What finally made them feel so threatened by Jesus that they were driven to cold-blooded murder. It was his apparent disregard for Sabbath law. He ignored the laws, tossing them aside as if they didn't matter. Jesus was the Lord of the Sabbath, and that's why they killed him. Now, to me, this is quite unexpected. Is the Sabbath stuff really that important? Isn't it just an example of outdated Old Testament legislation? One possibility is that Jesus is just saying that he's more important than the human rules the Pharisees are following. He mentions a historical incident involving King David just to illustrate that rules have been broken before. Is the Sabbath just an example of things that the Pharisees have got wrong? Now, I think it's a lot more than that, for several reasons. Firstly, the Sabbath is a major theme for Jesus. Disputes about the Sabbath don't just happen once or twice in the Gospels. Jesus has regular confrontations with the Pharisees about it. It even seems that Jesus goes out of his way to heal people on the Sabbath. He breaks this particular law at every possible opportunity. This is not a one-off. Secondly, the Sabbath is crucially important in the Old Testament. And I'm going to talk about this further in a few minutes. And the final sign is that the confrontation in the second story is very passionate. The Sabbath brings out an outpouring of emotion, both in Jesus and in the Pharisees. So you might expect that the story that Jesus tells about David is something that happened on a Sabbath. But actually, it isn't. Instead, its relevance comes from the fact that David was hungry and in need. The story, which comes from 1 Samuel chapter 21, is actually one of the most exciting stories in the Bible. But it's part of an extended story that runs from chapter 19 to 22, so we don't have time to read it here. So I'll just give a brief summary. It's from the early days, when Saul was the king. David had led Saul's army to victory several times and had married Saul's daughter. But Saul had become jealous of David. So jealous, in fact, that he had become paranoid. Despite David's steadfast loyalty to Saul, Saul imagines David as a threat to his kingship. And in chapter 9, Saul wants to kill him. Men break into David's bedroom in the night to kill him, but they're too late, because David has climbed out of the window in the middle of the night and run away. In chapter 20, he has a secret meeting with his best friend, Saul's son Jonathan. They cry bitterly as they realise they'll never be able to see each other again. At this moment, David's world has completely collapsed. He's now hunted, homeless, unarmed, and has nothing to eat. Then comes the bit that Jesus mentioned. In chapter 21, he runs to the priests and asks for help. Ahimelech, the chief priest, is scared. Probably, it's obvious from David's behaviour that David is a fugitive. The priests have no food to give him. But Ahimelech thinks creatively. There is some ceremonial bread, the bread that's presented before the Ark of the Covenant. The law of Moses clearly states that only priests are allowed to eat this holy bread. But the priest reasons that the need is exceptional. He is able to bend the normal rules because David is on a holy mission. Incidentally, they give him a weapon as well. They say, we don't have any weapons here. We're a church. Well, actually, we do have one. We've got Goliath's old sword. We kept it here as a reminder of the way that God saved us. You can take that if you like. So they've helped David. They've done everything they can. Tragically, just after this story, the priests are betrayed. Saul's shepherd was there, and he tipped off Saul about what happened. When Saul learns that they helped David, he murders 84 priests. The only survivor is the priest's son, Abiathar, who manages to run away from the massacre. And later on, he becomes the high priest. Notice that when Jesus mentions this story, he says, in the days of Abiathar the high priest. That's kind of an odd detail to mention, and I think it's a signal that the priests are the focus of this story. The future king came to the priests, hungry and in desperate need. They laid rituals aside in order to help him, and they gave their lives to save his. Those priests were heroes. The question Jesus implicitly asks the Pharisees is, if you had been there, would you have done that? Would you have helped David? No way in the world. The way they reacted to the disciples shows they have nothing in common with the heroic priests that saved David. The Pharisees haven't just made a slight mistake in misinterpreting the rules about the Sabbath and being a bit too strict. They don't just need a minor correction in their thinking. Jesus says, "Have you never read?" Which is really insulting to these men who've devoted their lives to studying the Old Testament. Haven't you ever read the Bible? If you knew what the Sabbath was, you'd recognise that I am the Lord of the Sabbath. Well, what should they have read? What is the Sabbath? The Sabbath was introduced in the Ten Commandments. And I think it's very well known that in Exodus we learn that the Sabbath is a parallel of God's day of rest on the seventh day of creation. But it's kind of a bit hard to understand why it's so important. I think we get a much clearer understanding of the reason for the Sabbath when the Ten Commandments are repeated in the book of Deuteronomy. And I think this is very important. So please turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Page 184 in the Pew Bibles. Here we see why God made the Sabbath laws. Verse 12 to 15 is where we read the commandment about the Sabbath. The key verse is verse 15 at the bottom of page 184. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. This is why the people of Israel were commanded to observe the Sabbath, because they are not slaves anymore. What do slaves do? They work. That's what being a slave is all about. Slaves have to work. And Exodus was very explicit about this. In Exodus chapter 1, that's how slavery was described. The Egyptians put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labour, says verse 11 of chapter 1. The Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labour in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their hard labour, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly. In the Ten Commandments, the Israelites are told they must remember they were slaves in Egypt. That means they must remember how they were worked to death. Why do they need to remember this? Why does the Sabbath appear in the list of the Ten Commandments even higher than things like murder and adultery? It's because the Sabbath identifies their relationship with God. The Ten Commandments begins in verse 6 on page 184. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. That's where the people of God are defined. They are the people who were slaves but have been rescued. That's what the Jewish nation is. And God wants this to be an integral part of their identity. He commands that the whole nation must be reminded of it every 7 days. They must not think that they've gone from slavery in Egypt to a different form of slavery. No, they must not work at all. You are not slaves. Look at how it's spelt out. Verse 14. You shall not work. You are not slaves. Your son and your daughter must not work. You are not slaves. Your manservant and maidservant must not work. They are not slaves. No exceptions. Do you get it? No, you still don't get it. Foreigners. Doesn't matter who they are or how they came to be here, they must not work. They are not slaves. There are no exceptions. You are not slaves. And then it really gets crazy. Your ox must not work. It is not a slave either. Your donkey is not a slave. Not just no slaves. The concept of slavery doesn't exist on the Sabbath on any level. And it goes on. The Bible has extra chapters that spell it out even more. One of the most extreme is in Leviticus 25. The land must observe a Sabbath rest. Once every 7 years, there's no agriculture. The dirt is not a slave. In God's land, every atom is free. Now let's turn back to Mark chapter 2. In verse 27, Jesus says that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made to remind you that you are no longer a slave. It shouldn't be twisted so much that you feel like you're a slave to the Sabbath law. Then in verse 28, Jesus says that he is the Lord of the Sabbath. Now perhaps we can understand why he says that he is Lord even of the Sabbath. For if you are a follower of Jesus, you are not a slave. No matter how miserable your life on the other days may look, no matter how much the rest of your life may be drudgery, no matter how you are trapped by poor decisions you made in the past, no matter what demons haunt you from your past or torment you in your present, one day in seven you see the truth. You are not a slave. And Jesus is the Lord of that day. This has an obvious application for us. We should do all we can to help one another experience the Sabbath. If you're doing something on a Sunday that makes you feel like a slave, work out a way to move it to another day. If you're doing something which makes someone else feel like a slave, move it to another day. God doesn't want us to ever go more than 6 days without a little slice of heaven. And the second story that Mark gives us shows how Jesus exercises his lordship on the Sabbath. where he heals a man with a withered hand. You might think of a withered hand as a relatively minor disability, but it's a serious limitation. I have a relative with what you might describe as a withered hand. He's got an extreme case of carpal tunnel syndrome caused by a lack of safety standards at his workplace. It's really crippling. When you have something like that, your hand becomes unusable. Even basic everyday tasks like dressing yourself become difficult to impossible. You're a slave to your disability. A large fraction of your day is devoted to working around your limitations. Well, Jesus heals this man publicly in the tabernacle on the Sabbath. He tells the man to stand up in front of everyone. He wants everyone to see this healing. It's not that the Sabbath law doesn't matter. He's not showing what the Sabbath isn't. He's showing what the Sabbath is. Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? A question that exposes the Pharisees. They are gutless as well as heartless. They are too cowardly to respond. They have no compassion. They do not see a deformed man who is suffering. They just see rules. On that Sabbath day, Jesus frees this man from his slavery to disability. He gives the man a foretaste of heaven, an experience of true Sabbath. But the Pharisees see only one thing. Jesus healed him on the wrong day. They see a crime. Can you imagine the scene? The man is there, standing next to Jesus, marvelling at his hand, turning it over to look at the other side, opening and closing it in great excitement. While the Pharisees are saying, "This man should still be a cripple. It's the wrong day. That's against the law." The scene explodes with passion. Notice in verse 5, Jesus looked round at them in anger. Jesus is angry. Jesus doesn't get angry very often, so we should take this very seriously. We tend to associate the wrath of God with violent, fire and brimstone passages from the Old Testament. But here we see the wrath of God up close and personal. Jesus is both angry and deeply distressed. Jesus takes this very personally. And as he says to the man, "Stretch out your hand," it's more than a healing miracle. It's an act of defiance against those who would deny this man his taste of heaven. As the man's hand opens, transformed from an ugly, useless deformity into something whole, healthy, strong, and beautiful, Jesus is announcing, "The Sabbath is mine." Jesus has done this in the centre of the synagogue, right in the heart of the Pharisees' power base. In a spiritual sense, this is an act of war, and they will kill him for it. The one thing the Pharisees had right was that they knew how important the Sabbath was. But I'm not so sure that we do. If we are followers of Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, then the Sabbath is our day. And I think we should reclaim it. So I have a question for you. What will you do today to remind yourself that you are not a slave? What will you do to remind yourself today that Jesus has rescued you from slavery to sin? What will you do to feel your true identity? There are many questions I don't know about how Christians should observe the Sabbath. But one thing I do know, the Sabbath is definitely something to get excited about. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it.